this morning on squaring the circle on the road towards a digital circular economy. So today we are going to discuss together what are actually the roles of digitalization in a circular economy. And when I started researching on this concept, I tried to find a good definition of what a circular economy actually is. And I found that there are many, many definitions out there from many different actors focusing on different aspects. So that we are all on one page, what we talk about today, I would like to start by just giving you one example of a definition. So basically, the circular economy, probably this is not news to you, is thought to closing loops in production and consumption, and the main goal there is to reduce waste, but also to reduce the use of resources and the natural environment. So there is one definition that I would just read to you from the EU. That you can find on their website, and that is: the circular economy is a model of production and consumption which involves sharing, leasing, reusing, repairing, refurbishing, and recycling existing materials and products as long as possible. In this way, the life cycle of products is extended in practice. It implies reducing waste to a minimum. They further declare that this is a departure from the traditional linear economic model, which is based on a take, make, consume, throwaway pattern. So here again, you see this closing the loop logic. So a number of scientists, policymakers, and industries have been arguing that digitalization is also a key component for making the circular economy work. The idea here is that you use different ICT technologies, you use big data in order to close loops in our economic system. Further examples for this are, for example, having more modular and repairable design, introducing 3D printing, and also tracking consumer goods, for example, with the digital product pass. So this gives you a overview, maybe, what we're going to talk about today. So the basic idea of the digital circular economy is to make digitalization work for sustainability. Today we want to find out, can this really be attained? And how can we have a really a circular economy that uses digital tools really to keep our consumption within planetary boundaries and also to allow a good life for all of us? So now I would like to welcome our guests here, and I would like each one of you to have a little statement. Each one gets like 5 to 10 minutes to show their views on the topic, and we start by Johanna Sudo. Johanna, welcome. Johanna is a senior advisor for resource policy at the NGO German Watch here in Berlin. Since 2014, she works on circular economy and sustainably mineral supply chains, and has been asked several times for advice as an expert in hearings, and is part of the research commission of the German Environmental Agency. Sorry, I'm reading that out to state it right. She's also co-founder and chairwoman of the organization Rundertisch Reparatur, or Roundtable of Repair. Johanna, why is the digital circular economy approach an attempt of squaring the circle? What do you think are the problems?
Can you hear me? Is it right? Yeah. Well, I think a circular economy is crucial, so we really can. It's not working.
Yeah, now it is.
Okay. Circular economy is a very crucial concept to actually reduce our resource consumption and our it's not on. The circular economy is a very crucial concept to actually try to reduce our raw materials consumption. And it aims at keeping the raw materials we have in smartphones and whatever as long as possible within the circle, the use circle, and to reuse it. And by this, we can reduce the need for primary resources. And that's crucial because we know, due to a lot of different movements at the moment and dynamics at the moment, the demand for raw materials is increasing immensely. And at the same time, we know that the impact of raw materials extraction is immense. And we have, even if we would say that maybe the raw material as such is not scarce, we know that at many places where there is the extraction of raw materials, there's a huge scarcity of access to water and land. And we know also that the ore within the rocks is getting less and less concentrated. So for every raw materials we extract, we need to get deeper and deeper, dig deeper and deeper, with more mining waste being thrown on fields of farmers, with more water having to be consumed, and with more human rights abuses. And already know the raw materials and the extractive sector is one of the sectors overall with the most human rights abuses. For example, I came back from a field trip to Latin America, and there in Chile, where there is a lot of copper extraction, people don't have access to natural water resources anymore at many places of extraction. And in Peru, people have heavy metals in their bloods, leading to cancer and miscarriages. And even, for example, in Peru, I think it's a quite strong example to see that people have been protesting and demonstrating for their rights to keep their livelihoods, and instead of finding a solution for it, often the protests are only shut down and the laws have been changed in a way so it's possible to go with arms against the protests, and the people shoot, the police doesn't even get any penalties for it, which was called as the license to kill. Because the problems, there's already a limit, and people say we don't want any more extraction and doesn't bring the development we want to us. And at the same time, so we really need to reduce our raw materials extraction, and this is by this we really need to see, we have to think circular economy really holistically. For example, in Germany at the moment, most legislative processes see circular economy very limited. They only look at the recycling part, at the waste management part, but don't, the most legislative proposals don't think circular economy really holistically. It's thinking of how can we reduce the goods we use, how can we repair more, how can we reuse more, how can we already design products in a way that we can use them longer time. And then only if it doesn't work in any other manner anymore, we go towards the recycling. And I think digitalization actually has a big potential to increase and to, it could facilitate circular economy. It could by being able to track materials in supply chains in an easier way. It could facilitate sharing models, for example, in the sharing economy. But at the same time, we see that it needs a lot so it actually happens to have a positive impact. And for example, if you look at sharing models, and the sharing economy is seen as one solution which could actually help us to use less raw materials and to use them more efficiently. But we see there's a huge risk for rebound effects, and to really have sharing models fulfilling the goal to facilitate circular economy. The sharing model has to really think circular economy the whole lifespan of the product, until all from the production until the use phase, until the after use phase, in a circular way, and that's often not done. And also many of the sharing models actually benefit from a data economy. They benefit from using and getting more data. And this has the impact that they often are rather, instead of creating stable business models, which would be important to have a sharing economy that actually goes towards long-lasting products and that are not only used for some time and then taken out of this sharing model again. And to really look that we, in overall, we use less products. We would need that stable system at the and the data economy, which is often the driving force behind the sharing models, goes often rather for data and for more users instead of trying to have less people using having a more intensive a more intensive use of the products. So we really have to look in carefully into these models to see that they really can facilitate and promote the reduction of raw materials. And this also implies, for example, service that repair is involved, remanufacturing is involved in all this, and that not products are used in a sharing model, and then after some time they're just going to secondary market or taken out again, and then we haven't won anything. So we have to look carefully at the models, how they're built, and at the same time we also have software as one issue that is essential to digitalization and which could be used in a very positive way, but it also includes a lot of risks. For example, often at the moment software is used, for example, in smartphones to block certain parts to use software so they can't get repaired by everybody. So you can't repair certain, you can't repair your phone on your own anymore because it's blocked by software. So it's rather, instead of being used to use the products longer, it's used always with the argument of security, it's used to inhibit repair. And it facilitates, software facilitates the monopolization of repair by producers. And we know that it's crucial that it's not only the producers who repair the products, because we know in the long run it's them. The business models are like that, that they mostly want to bring new products on the market instead of really benefiting repair. And we need competition on the repair market, and if only in the afterwards, only the producers themselves can repair, in the long run, repair can disappear. Yes, so we have, and also what we all see, software updates are crucial, and yes, and otherwise often products can't be used anymore. So software plays an important role and has to be regulated in a way that we can actually benefit from it. And one other issue within digitalization is that electronics is just spread out everywhere. There are RFID tags plugged into clothes, into whatever. Everything can become smart, to be tracked, to be controlled. But by that, we have little pieces of raw materials everywhere in clothes, which then afterwards are just dispersed, and we can't regain them again for a circular economy. They're just lost out of the circle. And even already now, we know that from smartphones, for example, only 30% of the smartphones are collected. And then even in a very high technical recycling, not even half of the materials and metals that are in a smartphone currently are actually recycled and regained for the cycle. So already in smartphones, which is quite a big chunk already, well, there's a lot of small parts in there, but already there we know that the regaining of materials is very difficult, and it will become more difficult if you have electronics spread out everywhere. Yeah, so in general, we see that there is quite some challenges to make the circular economy being a driver within a digitalization, or digitalization being a driver for circular economy. And for that, we really have to look closely at the risk and the potentials, and have to look for a regulatory frame. And that means, for example, we have to look at market concentration, we have to look at data economy, and we have to design the products in a way that we can use them a long time. And we really have to make sure that the digitalization doesn't lead to more market concentration, and, for example, a monopoly from producers on the products and the repair and the whole use of the life of the product within the life cycle. And by that, we can there is a huge risk that we lose the whole repair market. Thanks a lot.
Vivian, kannst du mal fragen, weil das ist brutal anstrengend mit der Technik irgendwie. Das ist laut,
gell? Halt extrem. We're just having a little technical issues. I think that's how it's supposed to be.
Okay.
So thank you very much, Johanna. You gave us a really nice introduction. Now, as our second guest, I would like to welcome Andrea Cardoso. She's a professor in the Business and Economics Faculty of the University of Magdalena Santa Marta in Colombia. She did her PhD in environmental studies, and Andrea's research addresses the political ecology of the global coal chain, just transition and climate justice. Andrea, first of all, please tell us a little bit about your work and how you would say it relates to the circular economy debate. And also we would be interested in what you think how the Global South could actually profit from a digital circular economy, or where maybe it doesn't profit so much.
Okay. I hope that you listen to me. I think yes. So first of all, thank you for having me here. Thank you to all the volunteers that have been working these days so hard in this such a big event or conference. I have been in many of the panels. I have learned a lot about digitalization. I'm really happy to join you in the discussion, and also I really appreciate that the organization brings the diversified points of view of digitalization. So as you said, my research focuses on study the cold chain between Colombia and Germany. What I focus on study is to trace the coal, because Colombia, my country, is the fifth world largest coal exporter in the world. Many of the coal comes to Germany and to Europe, and in every step of the coal chain, this process. Left behind a lot of environmental and social impacts that we call it social environmental liabilities. And we need to take into account these liabilities in the circular economy. So my work is dedicated, as a professor, I dedicated to empower young students to research and work in just transition in the Caribbean region of Colombia, where the coal is extracted. And many of my students come from, their families come from where the land has been impacted by coal mining. The land has been impacted through air, soil, and water pollution. And all the coal that is extracted in this region is for exportation. When a ton of coal of Colombia is exported to Germany and as well to Europe, to produce energy for digitalization, this ton of coal or this energy itself carries this air, soil, water pollution that is producing in the lab, in the land of my students' families. So we need to think the circular economy as a system perspective to look all the impacts in the whole process of the circular economy. Always the material and energy that requires for this digital circular economy is complementing. I mean, for this digital circular economy, you need raw materials, but as well energy. And we need to question with these raw materials as minerals and energy, where is they come from? And what are the impacts that they produce when we extract this source of material, of energy? And because the thermodynamics law and the entropy laws, it takes a lot of energy and as well material to reuse in a circular economy. And as well, it's supposed that the circular economy, the digital circular economy, comes from renewable energy. But we are in the middle of the energy crisis because the war between Russia and Ukraine. And this crisis showed us, at least showed to the world, that Germany is not prepared for the renewable energy. You are depending so much of gas, and as well you are importing, you are starting to increase the importation of coal from Colombia. And this digital circular economy is fueled with this coal, and this coal is leaving so much impacts in the land where I come from. So the idea of the circular economy, I think maybe Andrea is going to talk about the challenges to how to decrease the use of material and energy that fuel this digital circular economy. I'm going to stop there, and maybe later I will do more examples.
Thank you very much, Andrea. I think it's good to always remember that it's not only about resources, but the whole digital system is also very dependent on energy. So now I'm quite curious. Our next guest is joining us online. So that seems to work great. welcome, Almut Nagel. Almut Nagel is working in the European Commission Directorate General for Communications Networks, and she's a policy officer in the field of green digital transformation and works, among other things, on the European Digital Product Passport as part of the proposed eco-design for sustainable product regulation. She also works with businesses of the European Green Digital Coalition towards methodologies to measure the net environmental impact of ICT solutions. Almut, I think you brought a little presentation with you, and we're all really curious to get to know more about the Circular Economy Action Plan and what you are working on at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot. I do hope you hear me fine. As you already said, Vivian, I work with Digi Connect. From my background, I'm rather an environment person. Do you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, very good.
From my background, I'm rather an environment person, and in my former life, I was doing a lot of circular economy, so things come back together in a nice way. I'm very happy to be part of the panel today because it comes timely, and yes, the increase of demand is something we need to look at, but also with the overall crisis with Ukraine, and made aware that dependencies come, be it on energy or on materials, really need to bring forward the new approaches, and resilience has become, let's say, much more important in those last month. So certainly economy is, if you would ask me, where would I see in all the sectors the advantage of digital to go further into carbon reductions or material reductions, etc., it for sure would be in the circular economy. The first slide shows the European Green Deal that was issued as the programmatic policy program of the von der Leyen Commission in December 2019. And you see it's a very broad, let's say it covers a lot of different areas, from climate to justice to pollution to farm to fork. And one of which is mobilizing industry for a clean and circular economy. So this is one of the big pillars driving forward the European Green Deal in total. The next slide shows you the Circular Economy Action Plan that is, let's say, one more specific activity under the European Green Deal. It was issued in March 2020, and you see three main pillars. The green one says, make sustainable products the norm in the EU. So this is the overarching goal. It's about empowering consumers and public buyers, but it's also about making clear to producers what their role would be in production processes. It has been chosen areas, now I go to the red one, sectors where the potential for circularity is highest, and this is electronics and ICT. It has already been touched upon, batteries, vehicles, but also packaging, plastics, textiles,
construction and buildings because they use a lot of material, but it also, once it's used, it stays there for a long time, food, water, and nutrients. And the overall orientation is also to reduce waste, exports, and to boost market for secondary raw materials. On the right-hand side, you will see what, let's say, are elements to be looked at. And it's really about making circular economy work for people, planet, and entities on the ground. The next slide shows you, let's say, the overall understanding that it's, when we talk about circular economy, it's not only about the greenhouse gases and material reduction in the product itself. It looks at the whole picture. So it's about fuels, it's about the natural impact, it's about mining, it's about soil, water, which is needed. So it has already been said, we need an impact decoupling, and we need to look beyond the economic, let's say, benefits into ecological gains and social equity. Otherwise, we will never be able to make it. The next slide shows you the package that was brought out in this March. It's called the Sustainable Products Package, which is kind of the logic for the development of the Circular Economy Action Plan. It included a strategy for sustainable and circular textiles, new rules to empower consumers for the green transition, the support for circular business models, and there are, let's say, at 12 o'clock, you will see complementary sectoral rules, for examples, for construction and other categories, batteries, chemicals, packaging. This is coming up. In the middle, you will see the Eco Design for Sustainable Products Regulation, which is a proposal of the Commission towards Council and Parliament. They already start discussing it on making products that are sustainable the norm. This package includes as well a digital product passport, and I will go into this for in a second. What I would like to give you also a little bit more of insight is the new roles for empowering consumers in the green transition. The aim of this package, which is also a legal proposal in form of a directive, which would translate in German Rahmenrichtlinie, is to ensure consumers get adequate information on product durability and repairability prior to purchase. So before you buy it, you will know what you're buying. And it's about strengthening the consumer's protection against unworthy or false environmental claims and premature obsolescence. This has already been touched upon. It builds on two legislative directives that are already out there, Consumers' Right Directive and Unfair Consumer Practice Directives. So it's yeah, putting up to date. Other things that will happen now, it will come out with the autumn package, is packaging waste review, but also the substantiating green claims, where companies are held to substantiate, means explain and make more transparent when they say my product is green. They will be compelled to use joint methods, for example, for the product environmental footprinting and life cycle analyses, so that labels, not just everybody puts out a label like randomly, but they really need to be streamlined into a more comparable point of view. There are also review of the Industrial Emissions Directive, etc. But what is really interesting that I would like to go into is the next slide, which is about designing sustainable products. It's a legislative proposal that really wants by 2050 to have all products sustainable. And the basis is the widening of the Ecodesign Directive, which for the moment, when you're at least in Germany or also in other European countries, you go to buy a fridge or a washing machine, you will have the AA or B plus, whatever labels given to it. And this is, let's say, the running Ecodesign Directive right now. This will be enlarged, and has already been said, the need for design criteria will be added, the need for material information will be added, and so it goes much further than the old Ecodesign Directive, which is still in place. Just to be clear, this is still in place because the negotiations of Council and of Parliament on the new proposal are ongoing. It will take, let's say, roughly another year, maybe one and a half, until the entry of force, and then plus the transposition period. If you would please switch to the next slide, I will just guide you very briefly through the what is happening under the Ecodesign for Sustainable Products. This is, let's say, a regulation that will aim for a level playing field of all products in the EU, so for manufacturers in the EU, but it will also apply to all the imports coming to the EU. So here you will see the Ecodesign requirements that are listed on your right hand: durability, reliability, reusability, because it has already been said, if we want to use a product longer, this is, let's say, the best way to ensure less product, less material and energy use, because for a lot of products, it's not the use phase that makes the big difference. It's really the production part. For ICTs, it's something like 80% of the overall footprint of a device is within the sourcing and the production part. So if we are able to use something more in time spans, or upgrade it, or refurbish it, this would always be preferable to the, let's say, even circularity, end of life, in the sense of bringing it back to a material or energetic reuse in the sense of recycling. You will also see performance requirements, so what will be necessary to look how does the product need to work. And then the other big pillar is the information requirements to make more visible, for example, recycled content, possibility of remanufacturing and recycling. So information on repairability, etc. But also, if a recycler in the end, they need to know what is in what, let's say, formulation materials are in, how can I possibly recover those materials? So the end of life and waste phase should also be informed about. For a couple of products, there will be the obligation to set up digital product passports. This is something that will still need a little bit of time in order to be developed, to develop the system of digital product passports. What we have for the moment in the regulation is a framework for all this. The first digital product passport is already decided on in the proposal for the batteries regulation, and this will come into force beginning of first January 2026, the first digital product passports for batteries would need to be installed. And we are working with industry on this, with stakeholders in several big projects in order to collect the information, what would be needed, also touching upon intellectual property rights, security issues, how could that system work, let's say, technically, because we want to have a decentralized system, so no central database, it will just be much too big, and to also ensure that with the stepwise approach of including more and more products and having them with digital product passports, this is interoperable, because it's of no use if it's distinct systems and data from one or the other cannot be used. I think this is close to the end of my presentation. There is another slide on the benefits of the digital product passport. It's about tracking and tracing, but it's also about knowing in the end for the market surveillance what is, where are my products, how do they look like, and in the end, when it comes to overall view for policy setting, how much material do we have within the EU and at what stage of life is it in. The next slide we can maybe just skip, it's there on the empowered consumer and public buyers. I'll come back to this as much. The question is still, and it was already touched upon, how much you sell or how much we buy. This is very crucial because it would not help the planetary boundaries secure acting space if we have a lot of sustainable products, but just too many of those. The last one is a little bit with a smile. It is very important to be green, but it's also quite difficult for the moment with so much information out there to be green. So there's still a lot to be done in order to provide information at the right spot and not overdo it. With this, yes, I would like to give back to the stage, and thanks for having me.
Thank you very much. Yeah, we see that it is a, yeah. it seems to be a long and intense way towards the circular economy. So I already see a lot of discussion points here. We keep them in mind, but first I want to get back to Andrea Vetter, who is coming more from, yeah, various perspectives, actually. Andrea has, for example, occupations such as a transformation researcher, an activist, a teacher, or a journalist also. She works on the topics of degrowth, commons, and critical ecofeminism, among others. She's an editor of the popular magazine for transformation, OYA, and fellow of the Laboratory for New Economic Ideas in Leipzig. She's also a co-author of the book The Future is Degrowth, and an author of a book called Convivial Technology. And that's actually also what I would like to know from you first. What do you think, how can your concept of the convivial technology relate to circular economy? Does it fit together? Do you think that the circular economy is missing certain parts, or how does it fit?
Yeah, thank you very much for having me, I think. And thank you, Almut, for the talk you give, because I think I can directly go on from that, like having taught now 2 years at a design institute at a university. I'm very much in favor of eco-design, of course, but I'm also very much thinking about what you said latest, like there's no use in having all these green products and still have too much of them. And I think here we really have to understand what is meant by convivial technologies, to step back and think about what kind of stories are here at stake when we talk about the circular economy. And the circular economy is certainly becoming a very mighty story, like as you have seen in a lot of European EU concepts and other concepts, a lot of university fundings and so on, everybody is working with the concept of circular economy. And why? I think it is because for most people, as a proverb is going, you might know, it is easier to imagine the end of the world than the end of capitalism. And circular economy is certainly a way to keep up the illusion that we might be able to solve the problems we face on this planet with keeping this capitalist mode of production intact. And it is based on the central myth of decoupling, as was shown also by Almut. Like, the idea is to decouple the resource use from the economic growth. And that is a very nice idea. And it happens in a kind of relative decoupling at certain points. We can see it in the industrialized countries for the last decades. Like, there's this very slow decoupling in some uses of resources and also in some uses of energy consumption. But there is no such thing as an absolute decoupling. It's just physically not possible, because there is no such thing as a circular production in total, because to produce something anew, you have to introduce some kind of energy. And it's not possible to create these kinds of total closed loops that we would need to really overcome climate crisis. So the good thing is, there is not only these two possibilities of, on the one hand, there's the old mode of fossil capitalism, and on the other hand, there is the new mode of green capitalism functioning within circular economy. But there is also, if you accept that there is ways beyond capitalism, there's also a third option, and that is quite good. There's the possibility to have a kind of a post-capitalist, post-growth caring economy that functions in a total different way, because how our economy functions on markets, that is nothing that is nature given, and it has not been there for all the time of humankind. No, I mean, it's just social contracts. We are enacting in this kind of environment, and we could also do otherwise. So I think at this point now, it's totally important that we allow ourselves to have a much bigger imagination of how things could be. And therefore, I am very happy to be part of a project that is called Roadmap to a Circular Society. That is a 1.5 year project that is working on the fact that if we really want to have more sustainable products, we won't find a techno fix for that. But we have to think about a different kind of society. And that is what the term circular society means. In order to have more, like a bit more of circularity, which is surely possible, as is possible a relative decoupling, we need a much bigger circular literacy, for example, which means that people live together in other ways, that they change their socio-cultural structures of living together, of being together, of doing transactions, maybe outside of markets. So, convivial technology is a lot about finding other kinds of so-called business models and thinking in terms of economy, more of the blossoming of economy and not of the ever-growing economy. And as I went up here on this panel, I was thinking a lot about last time I was here on the first Bits and Bäume conference. I was facilitating a panel with Silke Helfrich, who unfortunately died quite young last autumn. And Silke Helfrich was one of the most important researchers on the commons in all of the world, I would say. And that is exactly what we have to think about. Like, how can we introduce other forms of technology in combining them with economic models that base on commons and not on markets and profits? So that is the basic idea of all kinds of free software thinking, of all kinds of open source and open data, in a way that is thinking about the term digital sovereignty also, because as we have seen, like the idea that in a lot of our products, they can be tracked down where they are all the time of their life cycle and then can be recycled in that kind of idea of circular economy, that is also a very big problem if you think about in what world would we live then? Like we would live in a world where all the things around us, for example, this chair or also like the thing, my clothes, my shoes, even maybe my pen, do not belong to me and I am not the one who can decide whether I want to share it with you because maybe we live together and I say, oh, you can have my pen or my clothes. No, it belongs to a company and the company will take it back at the end of the life cycle and put it and will kind of recycle or refurbish or whatever, do with it. But I don't think that is a world we want to live in, like a world where everything around us is owned by corporations. That is a kind of hyper-capitalism, and that is the total opposite of the commons, which means we can deliberately decide with whom we want to create a community where we want to share our things. And that is how we use less things, if we share them and if we live together in another way. Let's give some short examples and then I will finish. Do I have the time still? I think a lot of hacker spaces are very interesting examples for that. In that there is a collective space where people share knowledge and where people also share hardware and means of doing. And it shows that we can like tinker around and create new meanings also with old tech, because there's a lot of things already on this planet. The idea that we can build up everything from anew in a green way is a kind of hubris where we want to vanish all the things that are already there, but there is like billions, tons of artifacts on this planet that are already there and that could be reused and reopened, for example, with other kinds of open source software. Another example is from the agriculture point, like, I think the producing beyond the market is in the agricultural field the most developed in the model of community-supported agriculture, which means that people get a share of the harvest of the farmers and share also the risk. They don't buy it with the market, but directly at the producers. And how could we, for example, implement in that kind of agricultural production also new forms of agro-solar parks that are that will be built soon? But also, how can we think about using the least technological means possible? For example, you can do agriculture also with a horse and maybe not only with a digital-driven robot, but maybe in some fields a digital-driven robot is the very good thing to do, you know? But thinking about technology in a way, where is it really needed and where not? It's not like that automatically, the more digitalized version is the best, but maybe the other way around. I hope we can go deeper into all of these questions later, but I will stop at that point, I think.
Thanks a lot. I would like to directly give the word to Andrea and Johanna, who maybe want to react on the both solutions that we've heard now, or ideas. Who wants to go first?
Okay. So, the digital circular economy is still eco-dependent. I mean, it's still depending on the natural resources. As we see in this eco-dependency, we need to change the values. And what Andrea said, the economy of the commons. So why we are going to reproduce in a digital circular economy or in a circular economy the same values of the capitalism, where the capitalism is producing a lot of damage along the different value change. Why not to bring new values, for example, the solidarity, for example, the community work, for example, be aware of all the impacts, be aware and also recognize all the impacts that produce what we are using as well. So all the impacts that, impacts that is producing the mobile phones of the internet as well, and the energy to be, many people said we need to push the transparency of the circular energy, but it's not also the transparency, it's to be responsible of those impacts. And as a consumers, we have so much impacts. Or so much power to decide what type of energy or to decide what we are going to consume and what is our role in this circular economy. And also I would like to ask to the panel, what about the inequalities? How approach the inequalities in this, in the circular economy? You know that in the production of energy, the North has their own South, and the South has the South of the South. So, in how to approach the inequalities in the circular economy? How we mitigate? For example, the climate change. What is the role in the digital circular economy, the mitigation of the climate crisis, and how we approach inequalities and as well to decoupling the use of material and energy?
Yeah, I don't know. Nagel, maybe you want to answer shortly. How do the concepts address social justice?
Now you should hear me. Well, the social aspects are very important. To what extent it's already implemented in the proposals, this differs a little bit. So the idea with all those different approaches is to create an overall network of things, and I would like to give a word of caution. Regulation and legal frameworks are, let's say, in tendency always a little bit rather behind the train than really anticipatory. This is just, let's say, the quality how decision making is done. So there is a lot of room for, let's say, non-regulated activities, be it by stakeholder groups, be it by consumer protection activities, without pushing any responsibility around. It's just the fact that regulation cannot solve everything, and it needs to be clear that regulation is not putting more social stress on weaker parts of society or the global, let's say, equilibrium. But I would like also to go back very briefly to Andrea Vetter. I think she really did put the finger into where it needs to be. Sufficiency is something that starts to be really being discussed also in Brussels, which sounds a bit, how would I say, it's interesting because for a while it was not at all acceptable to talk about sufficiency. Now it came up with the, let's say, the sovereignty and the resilience discussion. Sufficiency really starts to be an important part. And here it's a very personal point of view. It is really very important. We can talk about products, but more specifically for that panel, we can talk about the digital. We really need to know where we need it and not just put it out because we can put it out. This will not be helping. And I'm fully with Andrea to say for some of the uses and the purposes, the old tech might even be better because it's not connected. It has less surface for cyber attacks and will run very nicely. It needs to be updated and software needs to be still available on those, let's say, older devices. But this is very important where we also need to look at. And what is very important is that we put digitalization into the service of well-being and planetary boundaries. One thing we really didn't yet fully discuss is also where digital can help to shorten the value chains and maybe make it more regional, where also the, let's say, the identification with the sharing concept that Andrea has put out could be more, let's say, felt for people, because in global value chains, the sharing might be a little bit more tricky. I would like to give you two quick, let's say, references that I really, really appreciate. Yesterday, the Digital for Sustainability Network of researchers put out a new report, Tilman Santarius, which is called Digital Reset. I think it's worthwhile looking into it because it's really about what values do we want to pursue with the digital rollout and the digital development. And the Commission has put out a strategic foresight 2020 on the twinning of the green and the digital transformation. This might also be of interest for you to show you in what mindset the Commission in total, not the individuals, but in total, is when it comes to those two main transformations that are very different in their character. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. I think, do you need this?
Yes, thanks a lot. And I think what became obvious and here now, it's really an issue about power and social justice, and we really have to make sure that this is not leading in more concentration of power with big corporations, as you pointed out, having a fancy name of sharing economy or sharing models, and then behind it's just more concentration of power by big corporates. So I think we really have to be very cautious there, and I think there we really need regulation to make sure that this digital power, which is not often very democratic, it's really leads to, for example, that the sharing model, commercialized sharing model, doesn't even make all the other more democratic sharing models to vanish because it's just having a bigger access to data and can just has it much easier to expand. And in this context, I think I think it's very interesting you were saying that the sufficiency debate at Brussels level at the moment is coming in again. And I think we have a big possibility we really have to take now. We see with the Ukraine war, it became obvious that also Germany, in the context of raw materials, is extremely dependent on Russia, but it also, and even much, much, much more, is dependent on China. And that it's very, very risky to be so dependent from countries, and even before 10 years ago, or even more than that, there was a raw materials initiative put out by the European Union trying to put trade measures on China to get access to the raw materials from China. And now I think it's a quite rare moment that we see this is maybe not the best option. We have to really get independent from China. And this circular economy can be one way, but we really need to reduce our demand and to see where we can really reduce the use of our raw materials in the whole circle to get independent, to get more sovereignty. And I think it's a very rare moment we really have to take now and see how we can really bring this debate on that we really need to reduce our demand. We have to bring this forward at the moment. And in regard to the social aspect, in, I think what the European Commission is doing at the moment, it's quite enormous and it's a lot if you compare it to many other commissions at the moment. When I started with German Watch more than 8 years ago, we were already talking about eco-design for smartphones and tablets and nothing happened. It was only another study, another study, another study. And now finally, 8 years ago, we have, 8 days later, we have a proposal for eco-design on smartphones. But there, I think, even in this proposal, to become very concrete, there we have a lot of ways where we see the social issue is not taken into account and also the power of digitalization is not really addressed. For example, there is no prohibition of the pairing of parts, which means the blocking of specific parts in products which make repair impossible. And I think all these issues have to be addressed, and it's also about access to information, access to spare parts by everybody. And I think there we have to really look into the detail to see that it really will have an impact and that it's not only meant to be good, but that it really can have an impact. And just because repair is one of my topics I've been working on a lot, we see now at the moment it's the first time we do, we're talking about right to repair at the European level. And at the same time, we see repairers, people repairing, actually repairing, are just getting less and less and less because the conditions are so bad and there are no people. Then it could happen in the end, we have a right of repair, whatever this is, because it's quite, have a different facets. But, and then in the end, we don't have anybody to repair anymore. So something to look at the local level is really to see that we, yeah, also in Germany and all, we really have to support craft to have people repairing and to, yeah, to make it possible that it's not in the end only the corporations being able to repair and they won't do it in the long run. And I think another just looking at the policy dynamics at the moment, there's a great push for a new raw material strategy at German level and also at the EU level. And at the EU level, it's not within the circular in the Green Deal. Or it's not, well, it's in the Green Deal, but not within the circular package. There's going to be a Raw Materials Act. And I think we really have to make sure that it goes hand in hand with all the issues taken up in the circular economy package, that it's really seeing circular economy as one possibility to have demand, to satisfy the demand on raw materials, and they really already there enshrine the issue how we get our raw materials and enough raw materials for the economy is that we need to reduce our the demand. So it really has to be looked at more holistically, and I think there's a chance for it at the moment.
Thanks a lot. So that everyone can also participate in the discussion, I think it's high time we include you, the audience. If you would have any questions now, you can raise your hand. There's a microphone going around and you can get prepared. Yeah, there's one question here.
Thank you. My question will be proceeded with a small case that addressed especially to Professor Diaz, but also to the other panelists. I'm from Poland. This is important in this case, because we are also a country with a big tradition of the coal mining, and our current authoritarian government denied strongly the climate change, you know, and invested a lot of money in the coal mining. It was very inefficient, so as a result, half of the coal comes from Russia, I mean, was coming from Russia. Now this source, of course, is cut. And we did invest in the other sources of energy. And now, in the panic, the government is importing coal from Colombia. And my question is, it might be good for your economy for a short time, maybe a short period, because there is a huge demand for coal. So maybe you can, you know, get some additional extra kind of income from that. And my question is, there is any chance for you, for Colombia, to avoid the Polish case and invest this money in something different than coal mining? Because for obvious reasons, this is a source of the past. So you have to find some other like triggers for your economy. And for the other panelists, the question is, do we have any ideas how to help in this transition? If we keep this division north-south, so how north can help south in this transition, And maybe, I mean, I'm open for these ideas for something new than the current capitalism, but we probably don't have much time, so we need some ideas that can be used like immediately. Thank you.
Thank you for your question. I think this event is a good opportunity to think about the responsibility in the energy terms. As I told you, for us, the energy crisis has been a big surprise, as you said, because the coal exportation increased. And Europe is demanding more coal from Colombia. It's the expansion of coal is getting bigger, and this is affecting the communities in the Caribbean coast of Colombia. So the study case is important because, also the panelists talk about the digital circular economy. We see the digital circular economy like a cycle, but actually we don't see the whole picture of that. Where these raw materials come from, and what is these raw materials and the energy itself come from, and what is the what happened there? As he said, and also there is a geopolitical context that make a lot of changes. And we, previous to the war, we were decreasing the amount of production of coal. And actually, one of the regions, one of the multinational companies decided to no export more country from that mines. And actually, they closed. And we are we are facing that close of this mine, but as well we're facing at the same time the expansion of coal mining in another region. And also the expansion of renewable energy in those regions, because this is in the Caribbean of Colombia, and we have a lot of potential in coal reserves, but as well a lot of potential in renewable energy. So this is a mix of energy there. And also I want to raise that for the digital economy, we need energy. And as we see, it seems that the governments and the polit in Europe and as well in South America, it tries to diversify their source of energy, but through coal, oil, through renewable energy, but it's not changing the system. It's not, and also it's not reducing the amount of energy that they use. So even if we leave the fossil fuels, I mean, the energy transition is not only leave the fossil fuels in the ground, means a lot of more for the people in Colombia, means dignify the lives of the communities there. And even with the renewable energy, we still are producing impacts in the regions, displacement of communities, because the renewable energy needs a lot of land for producing the same amount of energy that produces a ton of coal. And now, because the coal prices is so high, actually now we have a new government who is trying to promote in the just transition, try to make a energy transition in our country. But the problem is we have a lot of contrasts with these multinational companies that are exporting to Poland and to Germany. So what we are trying to do is to export, try to make that these companies export the coal, not from new mines, but from the same mines, because the coal prices is so high that they can continue to extract the coal in the same mines. That's why we try to fight that no, the no expansion of the more mines, more coal mines, due to the energy crisis in here, the geopolitic of the energy crisis.
Thanks. I just pass over to, I think it, Andrea was addressed.
I want also, yeah. Sorry. I also want to address that I think the circular economy is a good tool, but I need should be a complementary to the study of the value change. I mean, the knows where is the raw materials come from, and as well the life cycle of these materials. So the digital needs to work more in the life cycle and the value of change.
So that would be one first fast-track solution, so look more at value chains. Any other suggestions? I mean, the second question was, what can we do right now? What would be the things we have to focus on? And because the question was, we cannot stop capitalism right now. Are there any more concrete things that have to be done today, that how we can make economy more circular without, as not only relying on system change? I mean, you can answer, but maybe also someone else.
That's a very big question.
I think one thing that you mentioned is that the focus on techno fixes is maybe not the fastest way to reduce consumption, use, and waste. So I was thinking about maybe solutions that go less into the direction, which next digital innovation can we find? How complex can we make a product pass that it has all the information? But rather shifting our focus to social innovations, different ways of business models. Are there any ideas there that come to maybe all of our minds also?
Yeah, sure. I mean, if you're more interested in depth in this, you can also read in our new book, The Future is Degrowth, that we have like a whole array of strategies how to go on in the struggle for other economic forms. And like we stress, basically three interlinked strategies. Like the one would be creating more nowtopias, more places where we can try out other forms of living together. There's also this whole discourse about Reallabore in Germany, like real world laboratories. And I think we need a lot of them. For example, like all kinds of repair cafes, of, for example, the Otellos, it's open technology laboratories in the rural areas, all kinds of hacker spaces, all kinds of community supported everything, economic models. but we also need, like, of course, institutional reforms. And I thought of, as you were talking about the ability to be able to repair things. I mean, one big problem in that is that our current tax system in Germany, but also in a lot of other countries, is taxing labor so much more than resources. So that basically repairing things in a professional way is not profitable and is not manageable. And so, for example, thinking about a massive tax reform in that way, thinking about taxing labor less, or especially combining it with commoning forms. So you could think about labor or people that work for non-for-profit associations, people that work for corporations, for example, were taxed much less in labor costs. That would increase the possibility for not-for-profit legal bodies and kind of social business models to be able to have a lot of people at their service who would be able to repair a lot of things, which is already possible now. It's not a technological problem, it's a problem of how economy works. And of course, there is also technological problems that come on top, that sometimes there is this software thing that you cannot fix a smartphone, but the bigger part of the problem is an economic problem, that it's not profitable to repair things. And of course, we need all kinds of struggles, anti-extractivist struggles, where the coal mining, the lignite mining appears. For example, Ende Gelände did this very big anti-lignite mining struggles, and they do it all the time. They've done lately a very big action at the Kraftwerk Jenschwalde. And I think it's very important to do this, to highlight and to talk about all these kinds of struggles coming from the local people affected by this kind of resource extractivism that is also still on the base of all kind of industries, whether they're called green or not.
All right, we would have time for one short last question, if there is one. Yeah.
I'll try to be short. So in my work, I tell companies that they have to find new business models for themselves, for example, leasing and lending and so on. And this Monday, I was in Hamburg on the EnviroInfo, and I talked to Professor Braungart, who is one of the founders of Cradle to Cradle, and he told us that in the future, all the companies, they will not sell their products, they will sell the use of the products, and all you have to know is what's inside and when will you get it back. And I always thought that was a great idea. Now, Andrea, you said this is not the future we want to live in, and I found that really very interesting, because it was the first time that somebody, I heard somebody say that. And now I'm asking myself, am I unknowingly helping the forces of evil? Because I'm promoting that companies lend their stuff instead of selling it to us? What's the answer to this? Mm-hmm. How can we find a way out of that?
May I? Yeah, thank you very much for that question. Actually, I am thinking about this cradle-to-cradle proposals for over, I think, 10 years now, and I was asking myself the same question than you, and I would say, yes, it's evil. But not the idea of having this kind of resource cycles. Like, there's a very good idea in cradle to cradle, you know, in doing these products differently, in taking them back. This is very valuable. But I think we really have to decouple that ideas from the ideas of corporations making their profit by lending. And the other possibility to that, like where you could go in supporting corporations to find new business models, is really, I think, the idea of community-supported everything, or in German it's called gemeinschaftsgetragenes Wirtschaften. There is now a kind of, how do you say that in English, Dachverband, like a roof association that is in the funding. It's also called gemeinschaftsgetragenes Wirtschaften. And the idea is that you really produce and consume together in a kind of a Verbrauchsgemeinschaft. There is not like a market in between the consumers and the producers, but they go together like this example of community-supported agriculture. And then I think this is such a valuable kind of model that there is people who produce, I don't know, shoes, and other people who need shoes, or you can go that for everything. But they are not mediated by a market, but they come together instantly. And I think there's a lot of questions still to be solved in how can this use, how can a transition be, what kind of legal bodies are the most suitable for that, and so on. We need a lot of work on all these issues, but the work is starting, and I think it's very important that we go there and really think about how can we get to a world that is based on commoning from where we are now in little steps, and also then in bigger steps, in formulating from our day-to-day basis and see where is the boundaries to go into a more commoning direction, and then ask for institutional changes and other frameworks to support that.
Thank you. So we're coming to a close. Maybe to wrap up, I think it was really interesting to see how we have a new buzzword, or relatively new buzzword, of the circular economy or digital circular economy, where a lot of actors want to plant in their ideas that they already have based on the economic models behind sustainability views. Is there decoupling? Is there no decoupling? So I think it was really interesting to see in the light of the circular economy debates that have been there for a long time. That is, do we really need growth? Is it actually destruction in our times where we already have enough stuff, at least in the global north? Isn't it more about shifting resources to where they are needed and closing circles? So now I would just have a last round where everyone can say what they haven't been able to say yet. And it would be nice if you could just pick one thing that we discussed or not discussed today where you say, okay, everything is important, but if I could change something today, this would be the most important thing for me. We'll see how difficult this task is for you. And let's start with Johanna. I think that your microphone...
Is it working?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's difficult, one thing, because it's so complex. But I totally agree on the issue with the taxes. I think that's really crucial to think about, like what we have been discussing a longer time with taxing raw materials, the use of the raw materials as well, and yeah, taxing less labor. I think that's really crucial to think of a different model there. Now, really looking at what is happening in politics at the moment, something which I'm worried of a lot is the raw materials initiative, like now seeing Europe seeing that they don't get access to raw materials anymore from Russia, and they just go to Latin America looking for more resources there. And I think we really have to prevent this, that now trade agreements are used again to put pressure on countries to say, you need to give us all the resources you have in a way. Don't make any, put any added value on it, but just give it to us as resources and really maintain this power balance as it is in the moment. And I think we really have to prevent that this is just written and written again into the overall policies, and we have to take this moment now and try to get more of the sufficiency and circular debate into it.
Yes, for me, there are two take-home messages. The first one is the recommunalization of social life, how we are starting to think about the economy of the commons, even the big challenges, as the questions show us, and also the relocation of our activities, promoting the local production and local consumption. I'm not sure, I don't know if digitalization can do that, if you can produce and consume the local in terms of the material and energy. And to do that and to study that, we need to combine different tools or different methodologies, or different approaches. Maybe. One is the circular economy, but as well the value change of the materials and energy, and as well the life cycle. We need to know what are the whole impacts of the whole life of what is we are producing and consuming in the digitalization. Yeah.
Thank you. And I would pass over to Almut Nagel now.
Thank you. I will make it a little bit more personal in the sense of I saw my grandmother and my grandfather, who were born in 1905 and 1907, having lived through two world wars. And when I saw how they set up their lives, be it on social interactions, but also on their material life, on their consumer activities, I think I can still learn a lot, because they had their values of what is, let's say, what is worth in a life that were quite different to what we usually see in everyday. So in a way, going back to an old school understanding of what is important in our lives and do it with less materialism would do us all good. Thanks.
Thanks a lot. And so, Andrea.
I already said a lot, but maybe I want to again support what Almut said and go maybe a bit aside with that. I'm also always very impressed when I see what grandmothers, how thoughtful they are in a lot of times, or my elderly neighbors with the stuff around them. And then also I think for me, it's very important to think this old, kind of old-fashioned and maybe very future-oriented relation to things with ideas of being together in a more just way than it was 100 years ago. Like to mix that kind of frugal approach with the ideas of the queer movement, with the ideas of feminist movements and of post-patriarchal thinking of how to relate to each other. That is for me always very interesting in, so that we have a movement that is not just going back, but maybe stepping aside from this story of linearity and modernity where we are in, and really trying to find another way each day from where we are. Yeah.
Thank you. So maybe a final wish from my side as well. We've listened today to people that we don't normally hear so much in the discussion of digitalization and the digital innovations, and that is women, first of all. Maybe they are also underrepresented when we talk about technological solutions or how much technological solutions can actually help. But then there's also the side of not only listening to big tech companies, but also listening to people who work in civic organizations, who work in sustainability research, and so on. So maybe one thing that we want to address as well is when we are making policies, when we are making big ideas of what could the circular economy be, it's really about who do we listen to and who gets to set the narrative, as we've also seen with, is there decoupling in circular economy, or is it more a degrowth perspective? I think we find both in the literature, and it's up to us who we decide to listen to and how we want the circular economy to be. Yeah, so thanks a lot to our guests, and I hope you have a good rest of the day, and let's all talk. If you have further questions, we are here. Thanks again, Almut Nagel, for joining us. And enjoy your lunch.